Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Southern Fried Business Podcast. I am Connor Morganti, and I have an interesting episode for y'all today, and I call it All Hail the King, right? And you've heard that term, cash is king, right? Because I'm all about the money. And no, I am not talking about my dog, Cash, although he thinks he is the king of this house, at least. But if cash is king, then I'm going to pose something here to you. Leverage then is the queen, right? So all hail the queen. So I was asked to speak to a group of homeschoolers as they embark on studying money, economics, and so on. Everything money, right? And I was prepared to chat with them on me being a financial advisor and kind of how that works and what I actually do for my job. I had a funny post and I guess that last year on social about I have a good friend and one of my business coaches. And she said, Connor, I know what you do, but what really do you do? So I think financial advisors, most people know what those are, but they don't necessarily know exactly what they do. They just know it's money related, right? So I was ready for those types of questions. But their biggest questions were about how I leveraged my financial business and all these strategies that I have either developed on my own or learned from others over the years into where my husband and I are today, which I will tell you about also. So if you didn't know, here we go. I'm going to tell you a little bit right now. My husband and I own 3 restaurants and 1 hotel here in our hometown of Steamboat Springs. We only moved here a year ago, by the way. And everybody's asking, how do you do that? You must make a ton of money. You must be so rich. And actually, I probably make less on an annual basis than a lot of people listening to this podcast right now. So how do we do that? I will go back to my first statement, or one of my first statements. All hail the queen. So my homeschoolers that are in high school, they wanted to know more about my life's journey and those events that led up to how we have gotten here today with our businesses and creating that passive income and just being smart, work smarter, not harder. So I'm going to tell you all about it, at least in a nutshell, right? Growing up, my papa had a huge influence on my life. And in the South, which is where I grew up, we don't call typically our grandparents granddad or grandma or things like that. We always have kind of fun, cute names. And the grandfather that I was close to was my papa. And you'll probably hear me speak about him quite frequently because he had a huge influence on my life. He helped my mom raise my sister and me. He took me under his wing to teach me about money and business. And that was awesome. Almost like Mad Men, but I wasn't the secretary. I was learning to be Don Draper. I went along for cocktail lunches. I saw how important a simple handshake was. I sat with him while he played cards at the country club. And I was the only female there, albeit a kid at the time, because women weren't allowed in the men's lounge. But I guess that explains why I chose a career path where most times I'm the only woman at the table. So a little fun fact for you here. Before COVID and most everything going virtual, I would attend certain events and lunches specifically for financial people. And if it wasn't too big of an event where there were just too many people to count, I would start counting men versus women. And I never deviated from 8%. Only 8% of people present were women. So that's 92%, y'all. 92% men. And I don't have anything against men. I'm married to an awesome one. Little hard-headed, but pretty awesome. But, you know, that also is very telling of my financial industry moving a little slow, or as that husband would say, pond water. So my papa, being a man, obviously, he really wanted to steer me to be a CPA, also known as an accountant, a certified public accountant. And I always compare myself to your money superhero, but do you have any idea what my kryptonite is? I'll tell you, spreadsheets. Ugh, I can't stand them. They give me headaches, upset stomachs, everything. I'm getting a headache now just talking about them. I still use them, but I'm not a fan. But luckily, I did marry somebody that is a spreadsheet nerd, so my granddad would still be proud. I also learned the hard way what having no money is like. My parents divorced when I was really young, and I would have to go with my mom to the pawn shops to hawk anything that we had of value just so she could put food on the table for my sister and me. Luckily, my papa stepped in here again to help financially so my mom could get back to work to help support us. So that tells you of the integrity of my papa, and I'm sure you had a grandparent or somebody in your family that was similar. This was not my mom's dad. This was my father's dad. And he valued my sister and me so much that he felt it was important for him to help my mother, his former daughter-in-law, with us because we were valuable to him. So anyway, that's a side note because I miss him terribly if you didn't already know. But so he helped us financially so my mom could get back to work. So while I was learning about businesses from my papa, I was learning about hard knocks from my mom. I decided very quickly that I didn't want to live so close to the cuff when I was a grown-up. What could I do to not be like that? I had no idea, but I was determined to figure it out. Fast forward to the early days of my marriage. We were poor, but we would dream about our future life and what businesses we'd own someday. And ironically, we both agreed anything but business or anything but restaurants. Sorry. So I find that hilarious that we now own three. But I already had a few years under my belt in the financial world at this point, and I really, really wanted to know, what did rich people do with their money? Even though I didn't have any money at the moment, I wanted to make similar decisions. Excuse me. I might only have $100 a month to save, but I wanted it to go into either a vehicle or a strategy or whatever that these other people that were out of my league financially, what they were doing, right? So I jumped in. I read all the books. I talked to anyone that would mentor me. We didn't have info on the line or online, right? That's a little shout out to one of my favorite movies called The Internship. But we didn't have online like we do today. So it was all boots on the ground. And I found very quickly that rich people do lots of things different than we're taught to do. And why we, I mean, middle class people, right? First of all, they use, and I'm about to blow your mind, they use whole life insurance as a savings tool. Okay. They might use the stock market, but that's not where they start. They use whole life as a savings tool. So we immediately purchased policies on each other, my husband and I, and as much as we could afford. And in the beginning, it was more than we could afford. So when you have a limited budget and you commit to saving with a $10,000 a year premium, all I can say is, gulp. But we were in it to win it. Our next step in moving to rich people land, also known as money meadows, right, was to become a business owner or entrepreneur. We started our own businesses immediately. That opened up the opportunity of creativity with our taxes, so we could take advantage of any and all loopholes that are available. And that equals what? More money in your pocket, or at least hopefully, right? However, right, if you're more of a stock jockey, you're more into the market, then rich people I have found they wait for bear markets. And do you even know what a bear market is? It's a downward trending market, right? So we love corrections, or when an indicator like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, or the Dow, if you hear people on the news. So we love it when an indicator goes down or starts showing negative numbers. Why? Do you have any idea why? Because it's all on sale, girl. I think it was Warren Buffett that said, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, bull markets are for suckers. But side note, okay, have you ever wondered why we use bulls and bears to illustrate the stock markets? Why every stockbroker and every investment house in their office has a bull and a bear, right? I used to have one, but I decided to go more girly with my office. Maybe I'll show y'all some pictures someday. So I gave mine away to a friend. But have you ever wondered why that is? It's just very simple, and it will help you always remember why they represent what they do. So a bull, if you picture his horns, and for all my Aggie fans out there, you know what I'm talking about. A bull gouges up, right? They dip their head down in their horns, and then they rear up in their aggressive stance, right? And then a bear stands up on his hind legs to get bigger and uses that big paw to swat down. So that's where the bull and bear come from. So back to our topic. But most wealthy people or their advisors, they wait on the sidelines to buy into a lot of these things. So once prices or indicators go down or are down, they buy into that company or maybe a sector of the market, however they're kind of planning their strategy. Then they ride that wave back up, that bull market starts to go back up and making a nice profit, and then sell to some of the suckers. I mean, the bulls, right? They're not suckers. I'm sure they're nice people. But guess what? Rich people also have a very different mindset about money also. We had to change the way we, meaning my husband and I, looked at and valued our financial picture. So here's a question, not quite a mic drop, but I ask all my clients, so I'm going to ask you too. What is important about money to you? So I'll pause a little bit and think about that. Now, don't start telling me, well, you know, I want to pay off my school loans, or, oh, I want to pay off my credit cards, or, oh, you know, I just want enough money to buy some extra groceries. I'm not talking about that stuff. That's like day-to-day obvious thinking. But what is important about money to you? I have a 6-question set that will help you get to that end goal about what is truly important about money to you. And get to your end goal. If you'd like to explore how that works, let me know. Send me a message, hit me up on Instagram, pop me an email, whatever. But I'll tell you ours. So Brett and my goal, and it, what was important about money to us is, was and is freedom, right? Yes, I like being able to afford to buy clothes, or, you know, go on a trip or do all the things, right, that money can do for us. But the biggest thing for us that money can do is provide us freedom. So do you know the most expensive commodity in the world? Well, it's not freedom, even though sometimes in America it does seem like it is. But it's not diamonds or platinum or gold. It's time, right? Or being from Memphis, right? And if Julie's listening to this, she'll laugh. It's time, right? You can never buy back the time you've wasted. Maybe, and that's a big maybe because I have it in all caps in my notes, you can catch up. But just like that movie, oh gosh, I forget what it is right now. I really enjoyed it. But the odds are not in your favor, right? We can hope they are, but they aren't. Most people don't realize that if you save whatever you can in your 20s, puts you way ahead of someone else who started saving in their 30s or even their 40s. And that's if those people that are older are saving double, triple, or even quadruple what you started saving in your 20s. So most of you probably think, and I do the same thing too, and I have to catch myself and fuss, I'll save more money when I make more money. Or like my wonderful in-laws, I'll just work forever, but they enjoy it, so they're lucky. Or maybe I just don't make enough to save any money, right? So if you're in the younger group of my audience listening in, that's probably you. Oh gosh, I just don't make enough to save enough. Yes, you do. And I will tell you, you've wasted all that time, or maybe you can't work forever because you get sick or hurt, and you make enough to save something. I have a freebie somewhere on my site, and it's a simple graph. I didn't even make it. I pulled it off the internet on a calculator, and it was just about saving $5 a week. Like, legit, you can't retire on that savings amount, but it could make a difference in your retirement plan. So even $5 a week can make a difference. So now with our new mindset, we decided to purchase even more whole life policies to save more money. We didn't allow ourselves to get comfortable with our $10,000 savings per year within our premium. We increased it every chance we had. So now, again, this will blow your mind. We are multimillionaires just in our life insurance savings. Does that even make any sense? Because it almost doesn't make any sense to me, even though my strategies put us here, right? It's just so crazy to me. But it works. I did it myself. I would never tell you to do something that I'm not willing to do and experiment with myself. And I did. I was the guinea pig, and it works. So our next step in moving into, and quotes here, air quotes, affluent acres, right? Our money land, rich people land, was to start loaning ourselves money from ourselves, which is through our policies, to make big purchases or investments. Now, here's a little caveat here. I cannot and will not recommend that you take a loan out of something that has a guaranteed, or as close as you can get to guaranteed, growth or return, or however you want to use that term, like life insurance, and then turn around and invest it in the stock market. That is a self-defeating prophecy, and I just wouldn't go there. Now, if you want to invest in the stock market in addition to having your whole life policies, it's almost separate but equal, right? We're going to keep them separate. And then you can have a really great investment strategy on the other side of the road and take advantage of both opportunities. So we bought more policies to save more money to make these big purchases. Our first big business investment, we bought a hotel. I thought we were crazy, especially my husband, because he's the one who said we should do it. But how can you win if you don't play the game? So I'm not telling you to go out and risk all your money on crazy things, but at some point you do have to play the game, the money game, to make money, right? Playing the game is not putting it in your mattress. There you go. We were so worried and wondering if we made the right decisions. But within 6 months, we were then approached to buy into a restaurant, and then another, and now another. And we are consistently brought deals on hospitality properties. So if y'all are interested, drop me a line if you would be keen to learn about our process on how to find, evaluate, and maybe even buy an existing business. Starting a business, that can be rough. But if you know what you're looking for and you know your evaluation process, buying an existing business can be the way to go. So Brett and I have started teaching our daughter to save, and she's only 8. So for young people like my high schoolers, you are just beginning your savings journey. And odds are you still live at home or you have limited, very limited expenses. I lost my place. Yeah, so my advice for them will be different than my regular money friends. We've set up our child to receive a $5 per week paycheck, and that's based on extra chores she does around the house. But I'm teaching her to save 50%. So at the end of the month, let's say she's made 20 bucks. She can spend 10 and must put the other 10 into her piggy bank. No negotiations. So that is setting her up for success simply by getting into the habit of saving. Now, as she gets older, we might do a third, and a third. So if she wants to start with some charitable giving and explore that opportunity, then that's how we'll handle that piece. So back to my high schoolers, I gave them this whole backstory and where we are today. And to say their minds were blown was an understatement. Then their next question. That all sounds great, Connor, but how did you do all this when everything I see and hear is to pay cash for everything? And I totally love this question. Did you know that you finance everything, even when you pay cash? Sure, it will give you some peace of mind, and that has a value as well. Don't get me wrong. But now you've given up the opportunity to make money on that money because you traded it for a good or service. And no one ever tells you that. Everything is all about cash. My next point is that paying cash can be great, but you shouldn't pay cash all the time. Sometimes the best decision is to leverage an asset. And a question for the ages, if you have a mortgage because you like the interest rate tax deduction, but you have the cash and savings to pay off the balance of your house, then is it really a debt? Spoiler alert, no. So just like a tree in the woods, right? If you hear a tree, if a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to hear it, does it really happen, right? So same thing. Now you are using that leverage as a benefit to you, like a mortgage. Okay. Can be kind of goofy, but once you start picking it up and learning these little things, you are on your way because leverage can be your best friend or it can be mean girls on steroids. Remember the Great Recession of 2008? Well, I sure do. If you're younger than me, you might have lived through it by watching your parents struggle. That's a perfect example of leverage gone wrong. So many people bought into houses they couldn't afford by leveraging what little money they had and then used interest-only mortgages. These same people then lost their homes because their loan terms had expired. They couldn't refi because they would never qualify that type of home based on banks' new guidelines. But they also didn't have the cash to add to the refi to get to qualify. It was an ugly and vicious cycle. It could have all been avoided by managing your leverage properly. And by the way, I still love interest-only mortgages, but you have to use them the right way. In fact, I only suggest them to a very small number of my clients because they wouldn't know how to handle it. I know how frustrating money can be. Making it, learning about it, managing your hangups over it. Sometimes it takes a trusted advisor to bring a fresh perspective to your world to get clarity and grow with confidence. So over the past 15 years, and yes, I use an amazing wrinkle cream, my strategies have positioned my family with a 7-figure savings account. We have ownership of several 7-figure businesses and their corresponding real estate. I retired my husband January 1st of this year, 2022, from a very successful commercial real estate business. I teach my clients the same strategies that are bringing them their own versions of financial and money mindset success. Despite COVID, 2020 and 2021 were our best performing years ever, and we expect 2022 to surpass those. I'm a wealth and business authority with 30 plus years of industry experience and 15 in my own practice. And guess what? I can help you too. Do you remember the Mel Brooks movie, History of the World? Completely inappropriate, but oh so good. In one part, Mr. Brooks plays the French king. And after everything he does, which are rotten things, by the way, he says, "It's good to be the king," always with a little smirk and that beauty mark that kept moving all over his face. But now I'm going to change it with a little smirk on my face, no beauty mark. I will change it to, "It's good to be the queen of leverage," that is. The opinions and information in this podcast are for general information only. Any reliance on the information provided is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional advice.